Kevin?
Yes, sir.
I feel like violence this week.
You feel like violence?
We've been held up. We've been cooped up. Things are closed. I'm frustrated. I'm not getting...
You want to get in the ring? Is that what you're saying?
I need a throwdown.
You need a throwdown, huh?
I need a rumble. I need some UFC kind of just utter total beatdown kind of thing.
I want something kind of Rocky IV-ish. Can we get that going?
Yeah, you know,
it's like one of the best montages ever. I gotta
actually, you know, no,
Lee,
no.
Lee reminded me of that in his Mother's Day podcast.
Honestly, though, I think the better fight might be like Rocky II or Rocky III with overall. Where they just really.
I would probably go with III with Clubber Lang.
Yeah. So, I need something, Kevin. You got something for me?
Oh, we do. We do. We have a new segment.
Oh, that's what. What do you got? What do you got for me?
Well, coming up later in the show, we're gonna have a little fun here. Something you kind of came up with, and then I helped you kind of refine it. It's called the Throwdown.
Wait. Is this gonna be two men enter, one man leave?
Yes, or it could be two women enter, one woman leave, depending on what we choose. And it doesn't have to be people too. But yeah, we're gonna have a little fun. We're gonna throw in two things. We're going to make people vote on it. Throw some IMDb stuff out there. And what we're going to do is we're going to have two brothers who are directors go into the ring.
Do we have a little Family Feud action? Just keep Steve Harvey away from it. I don't need no Steve Harvey.
Yes, we do. We have Tony Scott going against his brother, Ridley Scott. And we picked about 12 of their best films, and I put it up on social media. And next week, we're going to crown a winner.
Okay, I'm in for this.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm excited. Let's get a little Mortal Kombat going on. Is there going to be some finish him at the end of the fight, Kevin?
I should probably see that movie.
I give up. Let's do this thing.
This is the Culture Clash.
Welcome to Culture Clash 169, where, yes, we will be throwing things down a little later on. But first, let's tell you where you can find not only Culture Clash, but all the great shows of the Fandom Podcast Network. And it all starts on our homepage at fbnet.podbean.com. Of course, you can also download the Podbean app on your mobile devices or tablets and search for the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, you can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. We'd also love for you to visit our Facebook page, Fandom Podcast Network, where that's where you're going to be able to vote on the throwdown that's coming later today. So, also on Instagram, you can find us on Fandom Podcast Network or on Twitter at FanPod Network. I'm Kyle. You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Kevin, where can they find you as you train for the throwdown?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
And of course, there's a couple of great ways you can support the Fandom Podcast Network and Culture Clash. And the first is at TeePublic. In fact, I think they have, as we're recording this, a 35% off flash sale running. I believe I just got an email about that.
Yes, they are. I just got that text.
And of course, too, you can find their logos from all the shows on the Fandom Podcast Network, and you can get them on...
Including masks.
But we like, because we want to protect our listeners. We love you guys. So go to tpublic.com and search the Fandom Podcast Network. And of course, too, you can also leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts on your Mac computers or iTunes. We love those 5-star reviews, of course, but, you know, we loved the feedback in general because, we're striving to make better podcasts to feed your ears.
Have you ever seen this movie, Kyle? Pixels?
I have never seen it the whole way through.
Why'd you not watch it all the way through?
I've just never caught it the whole way through, and I've never just sat down to try to watch it. We've had this discussion about pixels. Okay.
I'm just thinking ahead.
Oh. Gotcha. Well, before we get started, Kevin, you have something
that came from social media.
Yeah, dude. So we mentioned last week's episode that we were celebrating, of course, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you, our, I guess, now official Star Wars holiday. It's official because everyone pretty much recognizes it, right? You know, so, I mean, it's not necessarily on all the printed calendars, but it's our Star Wars holiday, right, Kyle?
Yeah. You know, May the 4th, it's a big deal.
Well, unofficially, people are celebrating the Day of the Sith or something like that. And a lot of people started doing it the day after, which is Cinco de Mayo in our country, but not in other people's countries. And people are going with Revenge of the 5th. Then people were going, no, Revenge of the 6th. And then some people go Revenge of the 5th. Revenge of the 6th, blah, blah, blah. So I put a post on social media and I said, let's settle this debate. I gave into one, but too many of you have disagreed. Is it Revenge of the 5th or Revenge of the 6th? Vote and make your case. I will make my ruling once and for all. My post, my rules, Kyle. And I got a lot of people voting one way or the other. I got some people say, well, why can't there be two? Because the Sith, you know, they like to have the rule of two. And I said, nah, you got to vote. I got, you know, it's my post. You know, you got to go with what I say. Kyle, what do you say? Is it the 5th?
I say it's
the 6th.
It's Revenge of the 5th. Yeah. It's the next day.
Plus, you know, some people have argued that it's like you're celebrating May the 4th and then you have the hangover on the 5th, and therefore you get that part. But I even took it to Twitter, and I tagged Rebel Force Radio, Jimmy Mack, and Jason Swank, and Jimmy replied, and he went with Revenge of the 5th himself. But I had a lot of people fight it, saying, no, Revenge of the 6th, because 6th sounds very similar to Sith, and there's one word difference between the two, and blah, blah, blah. But I counted up the votes, Kyle. And the winner is, and from here on forward, it will now definitely be known as Revenge of the 5th, not the 6th. So Revenge of the 5th wins. Going forward, I've made my ruling.
The 6th is the day of the child. Or, you know, we could just cheat completely and go, this is the May.
Yes. Well, that's what we did last week. So so there you go. Revenge of the 5th. Get used to it.
Well, Kevin, now that we've settled this major Star Wars debate, we got some other Star Wars news to discuss. So are you ready? Are you up for it?
Oh, I'm so ready. Let's do it. Let's news.
Let's news.
So we had some breaking Star Wars news today, Kevin, involving The Mandalorian as something that's been rumored for a while. And even going back to last year, this particular actress even had a tweet that might have indicated something like this. And that is Katie Sackhoff has been officially cast as Bo-Katan. Not just a voice.
No, not just the voice.
So
I think we need to just to clarify, because none of this is under StarWars.com. These all come from other things, but it's more than one place that's reporting it. And it seems like this is how Lucasfilm seems to be like releasing this information. And it's not like they're coming out and saying, no, this is not the information, right, Kyle?
Yeah, no, it's very much. I mean, it's being reported by legit sites. The Nerdist is running it now. IGN is running it. Some other fairly legit sites are running this. I would think that...
Question for you. Before we move on with this, I got to ask you a question. A few of my friends have said, I hate hearing about these rumors coming out of who's coming in. You know, we got the Rosario Dawson Ahsoka Tano thing going on. There was a another rumor about another character, and now we've got this one. Do you mind these rumors?
You know, to be honest with you, I think under this circumstances that we have right now, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think if we were under normal circumstances, I might have some more issues with it. But I mean, right now we don't have, I mean, Mandalorian right now is almost the only thing locked in that we know for sure is coming this October. Everything else is up in the air.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's already been filmed. They're just in post-production right now, probably effects and stuff like that. Right. So all of this has been filmed already. And you mentioned that in the beginning of this story that Katie Sackhoff did a very mysterious tweet last year.
Yeah, about she talked about doing something she's waited a lifetime to do and can't go into it now. We'll explain down the road or explain later.
Yes.
So what do you think? I'm excited. I love this. I've been all over this from the get-go. What I think is that I have a feeling that a good chunk of the Mandalorian season 2 is going to have some flashback in it and more telling about maybe some of the story of how the black saber changed hands and things like that. And I think that's where you're going to see Bo-Katan in this season.
Because there's also rumors that I saw online that we don't have in the news yet that a Sabine character, live action Sabine, might happen as well.
Yeah, I've heard that, but the problem is there's been no actress or anybody tagged with it. And I'm a little hesitant. I mean, their rumors are out there. Yes.
I saw someone from the WWE.
I haven't seen that, so I don't know.
Because there was someone that was already, I forget her name, but there was someone that was already cast in the new season of Mandalorian.
Sasha Banks.
They didn't say who she was playing.
Sasha Banks is who you're talking about. And okay. I don't know if I could see her as Sabine. Okay. But it's...
Personally, I think this is great. I love Katie, and I love that they're bringing, you know, a live action version of her character and that she gets to play it. I think this is fantastic.
Yeah, no, I agree. This is great. And let's go ahead and hit the other big piece of news that broke a few days ago. Temuera Morrison is returning to Star Wars, and it appears that he might be pulling a little double duty, because the initial reports were that he was going to come back in Mandalorian season 2 playing Boba Fett. But there have been underlying rumors that he could also make an appearance as Rex as well.
Yes. Yes. This is true. Maybe you could do both.
Well, and
since they're both clones, yeah. You know?
Here's my feeling. I think this kind of, if we are going to get Boba Fett in Mandalorian season 2, I think that was the character at the end of episode 5 of season 1.
Yes, the jangling spurs boots that came up to Fennec Shand's dead body.
Yes, I truly believe that was, if we are getting Boba Fett in season 2, that is who that is.
I hope so. I want to know that Boba Fett survived the Sarlacc pit, because he needs his due. In canon, he really does. You know, he went out kind of like a, you know what, the way he died, and you know, he's just become a popular character. It would be really nice to know that in canon his character lives, and then his character can go somewhere else, you know, whether in more movies, TV series, or books.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm looking forward to this. The one thing I'm getting a little concerned about with all these leaks, though, Kevin, is that they're trying to pack an awful lot. It feels like they're trying to pack an awful lot into season 2 of The Mandalorian.
It does, but not really. I mean, okay, so you've got Boba Fett, and you've got Bo-Katan, and you've got Ahsoka Tano. What do all these three characters have in common? They're all Mandalorians, or they're been part of the Mandalorian backstory. You know, and if we're going to get another 8 episodes, it seems like they're packing a lot, you know, and then we got the season, you know, finale of 1 with the Darksaber. I don't think it's too much.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. One thing I want to throw out there too, Kevin, have you watched episode 2 of the Mandalorian documentary that on the Disney Gallery show on Disney Plus yet?
Yeah, it was called like Legacy or something like that. Yeah, right?
Talk about giving Dave Filoni some spotlight time.
Yes, when he goes into that whole monologue at the table with talking about what Qui-Gon meant and this and that and how everyone afterwards was like, whoa, okay, we're done. Can we please give him the keys to the Star Wars car and have him be the new George Lucas, please?
Okay, so here's my feeling on this. And I think it's something that would...
Pretty please?
I think I would rather give the keys to Jon Favreau for a couple of years. Maybe Dave's on his learner's permit. And the only reason why I say that is Dave is still kind of getting his feet wet in live action. And he even talked about that.
When it comes to Star Wars direction and storytelling and what it is to me and what it is, the formula to tell a Star Wars story, he's the guy.
Oh, yeah. He is the guy. But I think having Favreau there as far as managing the movies and I think Favreau just has...
I don't mind them working together. I want, when it comes to story and direction of where story should go and how Star Wars story should be told, it needs to be with Filoni.
Well, I think it's very obvious, even from what we've seen in these first two episodes, there's a great connect between all the creative minds on The Mandalorian.
Yeah, I mean, Favreau seems to be really good at collecting these great minds and finding great teams, but they're still working around their single vision that both Filoni and Favreau seem to be in line and in sync with.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Looks like October's still in line for Mandalorian season 2. Can't come fast enough, in my opinion.
I wouldn't mind if they moved it up a little bit. Just saying.
Yeah. Right now I'm good as long as I don't hear it's moved back.
So, my only request is I want longer episodes. I'd like hour episodes. That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. But there was another piece of news that...
By the way, hold on. Before we move forward, can I just say one more thing about The Mandalorian?
Yeah.
I actually just finished a rewatch with my daughter, Camille. She had seen it for the first time. We did like a couple episodes at a time, and she really enjoyed it. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Very cool. Hi, Camille, if you're listening. Anyway, so there was another rumor news. And see, this is a problem with lockdown. And even though things are starting to slowly open up a little bit, the news is slow. And a lot of stuff is rumors. But this is pretty big considering what's happened over the last few weeks. Amazon is at least sniffing around AMC theaters, Kevin.
Amazon's got money.
Amazon has a lot of money.
They have a lot of my money, that's for sure.
This is a big deal. If there is, and where there's smoke, there's fire. And Amazon stock took a huge, and AMC stock took a huge jump the other day on the stock market. So I think there's a little bit more to this than just sniffing around. But AMC's been in financial trouble for a while now, even really before the pandemic hit and everything locked down. But Amazon buying basically what, in my opinion, is probably the largest movie chain in the States right now. Kevin, would you agree on that?
Yes, definitely. And my favorite personally.
Yeah. Would be absolutely huge, especially when you consider that AMC is basically in a little bit of, like we talked about last week, a game of chicken with Universal Studios. To me, if Amazon buys AMC, the only studio that they probably couldn't get into a stare down contest with would be Disney.
Yeah, it's true. What would this mean for AMC specifically? Would this mean that if Amazon owned and operates AMC, would anything change with AMC and what they show on the big screen? Would they show Amazon exclusives on the big screen? That might be kind of cool.
I think you'd see some Amazon exclusive films in AMC theaters, and that helps them as far as Oscar consideration goes too.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I think you see a lot of things incorporated where you can buy movie tickets through Amazon now. Instead of like Fandango or something like that, you could probably have something with your Prime membership that gives you discounts, things like that. There's a lot of possibilities here. And I mean, we all know Jeff Bezos just has throwaway money. I mean,
yeah. In my area, there is no, the only theater chain here in my area here in Santa Barbara, California is the Metropolitan Theaters. And I don't know if there's like an agreement or what that no other theater chain has come up in this area. I know there's an independent theater here, but I would love for an AMC to come up here because I have to drive like an hour and a half to the closest AMC, unfortunately. And I really love that theater chain. I miss it.
Yeah, no, it's my favorite chain down here in Florida.
I miss going to the movies, dude.
Yeah, but you and me both, and it's still going to be a while, unfortunately. But like I said, this would be a game changer, and I think it would really put AMC in a place of power within the movie industry.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's going to be very interesting to see if anything passes of this. A little bit of sad news, though, too, Kevin. Jerry Stiller passed away.
Yeah, Ben Stiller's father. Jerry Stiller, would you say he's more known for Costanza's dad?
I think at this point, yeah. I would completely agree with that. But
the Manzier, the Festivus. Yeah.
He was 92 and had a very good life, and obviously also the father to Ben Stiller, but you know, still sad. You know, we've lost a, this was an interesting week. Little Richard also passed away. Roy Horn from Siegfried and Roy passed away. You know, they say those things are coming threes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. He was such a good and funny actor, and he was Serenity Now. He was so good on Seinfeld. I liked him in Zoolander as well. He's worked with his son several times.
Now, this story has been making the rounds for about a week now, Kevin, and I find this interesting, and I actually hope that there's more to this than what's been put out there, but there are rumors Disney is gearing up to do some more Pirates of the Caribbean movies, but not with Johnny Depp in the lead role. They're looking at Karen Gillan taking over the series, and I would be all in on this because I would love to see Karen Gillan finally get a franchise of her own to carry.
Yes, please. I agree completely. I like the world that has been created by Disney and the Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm Depp burnout, though. I'd like to see something else happen within that world. And I would love to see a female lead. And yes, please, Karen Gillan. Yes, please.
Yeah, I think it's past due that she has a chance to move her star up. She's done the sidekick co-starring with The Rock on Jumanji, where I think she handled herself and was just as much there as The Rock was.
You know, and she's part of the Marvel Universe as Nebula. I mean, yeah, she can definitely handle it.
Yeah. So I'm very much for this. So
I think it's easy to say as well that we both have little movie crushes on her.
More than a little movie crush. Mine goes back to a certain doctor. So.
Oh, yes. Doctor Who.
Miss Pond, if you will. But lastly, Andy Serkis has come out and talked a little bit about the new upcoming Batman film that Matt Reeves is directing with Robert Pattinson. Andy Serkis is playing Alfred in this film.
I forgot about that, to be honest with you. Yeah.
But he talks about how the relationship between Alfred and Bruce Wayne is going to be a very important part of this movie. He was quoted as saying, "It's very much about the emotional connection between Alfred and Bruce. That's really at the center of it. And it's a really exquisite script that Matt has written." When asked if the film will feature a darker or broodier version of Batman, Serkis said, "I wouldn't say that's not far from the truth." He also praised Michael Caine for his performance as Alfred in Christopher Nolan's Batman films. Right now, this is still on schedule to be released October 1st, 2021, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. I I'm curious to see how he is as Alfred, and that's always been a very symbiotic relationship between him and Bruce Wayne, and he's always been a mentor and a father figure, and has always been part of the detective as well, you know.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Who is your favorite Alfred, Kevin?
Right now it's Caine, definitely. Caine was just so good. Caine was so important in those Nolan films. You know, especially when it came to the business side of things as well. I would definitely go to Caine. Because, you know, his finest moment is when he's talking about The Dark Knight and about how some people just want to watch people things burn, you know, and he's talking about that whole thing when he was in Burma, and that was just a really good moment there. What about you? Who's your favorite?
I really like Caine, but I always have a soft spot, and I can't remember the actor's name, but he started as Batman in the Tim Burton as Alfred in the Tim Burton film, and was the only member of that cast to be in all four episodes of that kind of era of Batman.
Oh yeah, well, I forget his name, but he really looked the part, to be honest with you.
He looked the part, and he carried himself in the part very well, I think. I think Kane, they played up more of the Soldier of Fortune Alfred version that's been out there. Well, to me, I think that Alfred was a little bit played more like the traditional style Alfred that we kind of grew up with.
Right. Kane was closer to Bruce Wayne, I think, in the Nolan films. They were just definitely,
I agree. So, well, that's going to wrap up the news, but at least I have seen a few things for once. So it's time once again to
buy it, stream it, or unsee it.
And this is going to be the documentary version of it. Because, Kevin, I want to talk about a couple documentaries that are running on streaming services or television.
By the way,
as we speak.
I just realized I just watched a documentary as well, and I will share that with you after you're done.
Okay, well, the first thing I want to talk about is this ESPN documentary that's been getting a lot of attention because there's really not a lot of sports right now, so sports fans are going crazy over it. And that is The Last Dance, the story of the Chicago Bulls in their final season. But the great thing that's been about this documentary is it's going all over the timeline, and you're seeing footage of Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls you have never, ever seen before. And it's really a behind-the-scenes depth, and I think probably...
Can you clarify something? Is this about the last season?
The main focus is the last season, but they each episode of the documentary, they kind of hit different times in some of the players' lives to explain how everything came to a head in that 98 season, which was the last season that team was together.
Gotcha.
So, but you get an insight to Michael Jordan that I don't think we've ever gotten before. And one of the great things about it is they're interviewing him here in the present day now, and I think he's more open and honest than he has ever been in any interview in his life.
What surprised you most about this documentary? I've been hearing a lot of good stuff about it.
Just the fact it's really, they didn't have limits. They gave them these documentaries full access at the time. And even now in the interviews that they're doing, there's no holding back. You're getting the full story and you're seeing a lot of things. And it's really nice. The curtain is definitely revealed here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just been superb. If you're a sports fan, if you're a fan of Michael Jordan, this is a must watch documentary series. How long is it? It's 10 episodes, each episode an hour.
And it's on ESPN.
Yeah. It's the final two episodes are coming out this Sunday. They've been doing two episodes every Sunday night.
Okay, cool. Cool.
So now, Ken, I'm going to go a little WWE on you, but I got to ask you this because I think even you, not being a huge WWE fan, knows who the Undertaker is.
I know what he looks like.
Okay, well, we'll work from there. The Undertaker is probably one of the longest-lasting professional wrestlers in history. Has only worked.
He kind of has makeup like the Crow, doesn't he?
No, that was Sting.
Oh, okay.
The Undertaker has been in professional wrestling for 25 plus years now. He has been like the staple of WWE, probably even more so than really when you break it all down, Hulk Hogan even. But the thing about the Undertaker is the wrestler who portrays the character is a gentleman by the name of Mark Calloway, and he has always believed in playing the character. He's always played, never let really people inside. Well, he's getting close to retirement. The last few years, it's been very obvious. He's only really wrestled maybe once or twice a year, usually every year at WrestleMania. Well, the WWE, he's finally opened the doors and they're doing a 5-part series called The Undertaker, The Last Ride. And it's a full behind the scenes, and you're really getting to see the person Mark Calloway for probably the first time. And it's quite revealing. And if you're a wrestling fan of any kind, you need to check this out because it's an insight to somebody who has been a landmark person in professional wrestling in a way you've never seen him before. And it's really humanizing him and just really, again, like the Last Stand documentary, really pulling back the curtain on a lot of things. And the first episode aired this past Sunday night, and you can see it on the WWE Network streaming service. And it was quite entertaining, and I can't wait because there's still 4 more episodes to go, but they're going to really, I think, do a lot of things in showing what The Undertaker is all about. And I think it's quite interesting, Kevin.
The guy that plays The Undertaker, what's he like in person?
He seems like He's very intense and he likes his privacy, but he's also very respectful, and he's considered by many to be one of the most respected WWE superstars in history. Just how he was in the locker room, how he treated people.
Was he touted as like a villain at first, and then, you know, some are like villains and some are not.
He started off as a heel. They introduced him to be a foil to Hulk Hogan. He's been back and forth as a heel and a face throughout his career.
What do you mean by heel and a face?
Heel means you're villain, a bad
good
guy. Heel's a bad guy. Heel's a villain. Face, like, okay. A baby face. Like, he's the hero. He's the baby-faced hero.
Okay. So villain, good guy. Gotcha.
Yeah. So he's gone back and forth. That's how the world of professional wrestling works. But, I mean, it's very interesting. And like I said, it's very cool what you're seeing. And that's something I'm actually liking about what's going on with all the lockdown stuff, is we're seeing a lot of documentaries and other things. And we're getting a little bit of behind the curtain view here, like a little bit of the Wizard of Oz, Kevin.
Okay.
So you said you had a documentary you had checked out?
Yeah, something that was kind of sort of near and dear to my heart because it happened near me. I saw a documentary about Natalie Wood called Natalie Wood, What Remains Behind.
I've heard about this.
And it's a documentary done by one of her daughters. And it's exploring her life and career through the perspective of her daughter and her children. And one of the reasons why her daughter wanted to do this documentary about her mother, Natalie Wood, a famous actress, is because the circumstances of her death have overshadowed her awesome career and also her being a good mother and stuff like that. Her mother's had several husbands. She married Robert Wagner twice. But the circumstances of her death, her and Robert Wagner, they'd gotten remarried. And it was in 81, and they were on their boat in Catalina, California. Do you know where Catalina is, Kyle?
I know of Catalina, but I don't know exactly where it's at in California.
There, in Southern California, there's a string of what we call channel islands that are about maybe 30 miles or so right off the coast of California. Most of them are kind of national parks. There's not a lot of people on them, with the exception of Catalina. You get there by taking a shuttle or your own boat near like Long Beach Harbor area near L.A., and you can get out there in about like 30 minutes or so, I think, or maybe a little bit longer, depending on the type of shuttle, water shuttle that you take out there. And there's a little city called Avalon, and it's gorgeous. And I've been there myself. An old girlfriend of mine, we went there once, and we met her stepfather, because out there with her mom, because they had a boat that was out there. And it's a great little town. There's not a lot of cars, but there's like golf carts that kind of go all over the city. And there's a beautiful, like, natural parks and stuff like that. And there's an old theater there as well. And it's a really neat little town with a beautiful little harbor. Well, Natalie Wood, under weird circumstances, I think she may have been, they found that she had alcohol and sleeping pills and stuff like that in her system. She drowned, basically. She'd taken the little small dinghy boat. Something happened, and her body was found floating nearby when they were trying to find out what happened to her. And there, you know, the media really kind of jumped on this and was very intrusive, including even at the funeral. A lot of people were wondering if Robert Wagner had anything to do with it, and you know, and he has never been like a suspect. He's been a person of interest, of course, because he was on the boat or nearby. But there was never any reason to believe that he had any foul play doing this. But anyway, the media just loves to play up that part of it and has been doing it for years. But this is a really wonderful documentary that goes all the way back to where, you know, she has Russian lineage. And she even spoke Russian. Her family was Russian. And all her early days from, you know, when she was that little girl on Miracle on 34th Street and all these other movies that she's done, and all these fantastic people that she's worked with, and all the different leading men she's worked with in all these famous movies, you know, Rebel Without a Cause, you name it, all the other ones. And they interviewed people like Diane Cannon, Mia Farrow, Elliot Gould, of course, Robert Wagner, Jill St. John, George Segal, Robert Redford, David Niven. And they would always have like these Christmas parties and New Year's Eve parties, and all these famous people would be there. It was just like a who's who of what. And it was a really nice documentary about a woman who was a really cool person to her fans, a great mother, and unfortunately gets overshadowed because of the circumstances of her death.
I wanted to ask you about this, Kim, because I'm very familiar.
And by the way, just to clarify, to get down to Long Beach, it's about a 2-hour drive from where I live. So it was big news when it happened in our area. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, no, I wanted to ask you about this because I'm very familiar with the story and I've always been kind of fascinated by it. One of the things that I think is so interesting about this is the fact Christopher Walken was on that boat and he refuses to talk about things. He just will not talk about it, period.
Yeah, he only talked to the police and that was it. You know,
he was
a close personal friend of the family.
Yeah, so this is going to be one of those things we're either going to find out, we're never going to know, or we're going to find out when somebody's on their deathbed.
Yeah. I mean, she was also in West Side Story. I mean, the thing that was sad too was that the last film that she was filming while she died was Brainstorm, and she was kind of like on the rise again. She was a woman in her 40s, and she was kind of making a second comeback. It was kind of sad.
Yeah, no, that most definitely. But with that, Kevin and I are going to take a quick break as we go to the corners, get our gloves on.
Ding.
Yep. Exactly. Cause it's time for our new segment Versus. But first, here's a little bit about what else is on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, a weekly pop culture podcast. For you movie fans, we have Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite cult classic and guilty pleasure movies. We also have Time Warp. That's our fandom flashback show, where we like to look back on our favorite fandoms. For you NFL fans, we have the End Zone podcast. And of course, for you Alfred Hitchcock fans, please check out Good Evening. For you Star Trek and Orville fans, we also have the Union Federation podcast. And for you hard rock metal fans, we have Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Doctor Who fans, we've got one for you as well. We have Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. If you're a fan of 1980s action films, please check out Lethal Mullet. And our newest show, we have a Star Wars podcast called What a Piece of Junk. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Please search on Facebook for Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Well, we hope you're enjoying everything we're putting out. We're trying to do our best to feed your ears with great podcasts while you are locked down in quarantine. And especially as, you know, Kevin, original materials are really starting to run short.
Yes.
It's getting,
but we've been creative with our segments here, you know, so.
Yeah, I think we're doing okay. But Kevin, I just have one question for you.
Are you ready to throw down?
Yes. Throwdown segment Versus here. Yep. So, this was your brainchild, and then I kind of worked with you on this here. We wanted to take some famous people or directors or, you know, and pit them together in their careers. We might even do inanimate objects. Who knows? We'll be creative with that. But we decided to do directors first because there's two directors that are related. Unfortunately, one of them is not with us anymore, but they're brothers, and they both have a wonderful resume of films that have a legacy to their own, and that is Tony Scott and, of course, his brother Ridley Scott. Tony Scott was the younger one. He was born in 1944. Ridley Scott was born in 1937. Unfortunately, Tony Scott committed suicide in 2012 when he jumped off a bridge in the LA Harbor. Unfortunately ended his life earlier than, of course, we wanted to see him because of his wonderful work. But both of them have had wonderful resume of films. So we picked picked 12 films from their resume, their best films, that we felt that best represented them and their legacy. Wouldn't you say, Kyle?
Yes, I would. And a couple of things here, Kevin, real quick, if you'll indulge me. First of all, I can't believe it's already been that long since Tony Scott passed away.
Yeah, I stumbled upon his headstone actually in Los Angeles at the cemetery that he's at. Aaron and I were looking for a few other ones, and I saw this headstone, and it had all of these movies that were engraved on it. And I'm like, wait a minute, I know these movies. And I realized who it was. It was Tony Scott's headstone.
Yeah. But we are talking about, I think, probably the two most successful brothers as far as amount of films created and stuff. But I think two very different, interesting approaches. So with that, Kevin, if you'll indulge me for a moment, let's get ready to throw down.
Yes.
Ding, ding, ding. It is it's time to start this fight. We've got Tony Scott versus Ridley Scott, Kevin.
Okay, so I put a post on social media, and I had a couple of criterias that I wanted people to consider before they gave their vote. And some people have already given their vote, but we're going to let this roll out a little bit for the rest of this week, and we'll come back with the final vote next week on this. But I said in the post, I said, we want your vote for the throwdown. Kyle and I have a new segment on Culture Clash. We're putting two directors, actors, movies, TV shows, etc. together. Please vote in the comments on who the winner should be. Please vote with rewatchability and longevity in mind. Let's pit the brother directors against each other's first. We've picked their top 12 movies below. Please vote.
Yes. And I think, you know, as I looked at these movies and studied them for this segment, it's two very interesting approaches. And so, if you don't mind, I'd kind of like to come out with the first round and throw my hooks and uppercuts and a few jabs out there, Kevin.
Well, let's do this. Why don't you take one brother and list their films, and then I'll take the other brother and list their films,
okay,
and then we'll get into the nitty gritty.
Okay. Well, I will take Tony Scott, and the films we targeted with Tony Scott, we got Top Gun. Obviously.
Now I start, just so you know, when I put this list together, I started from the earliest to the most recent.
Yeah, no, and that works. We've got Beverly Hills Cop 2, Days of Thunder, Revenge, The Last Boy Scout, True Romance, Crimson Tide, Enemy of the State, Spy Game, Man on Fire, Domino, and Unstoppable.
And I've got Ridley Scott with Alien, Blade Runner, Legend, Black Rain, Thelma and Louise, G.I. Jane, Gladiator, Black Hawk Down, Kingdom of Heaven, American Gangster, Prometheus, and The Martian.
So, Kevin, as I'm looking at these films on both sides here, one of the first things that comes to mind for me, and I'm curious if you what your thoughts on this. To me, when I look at Tony Scott, what I see are films across the board that are ultimately always rewatchable. I look at the list we have. I could rewatch any of these films at any time. And then when I look at Ridley Scott, for me, what I see is I see some amazing films. Some of them are rewatchable, but I think there's more poignant films in Ridley Scott's.
Yeah, resume. And I also think Ridley Scott has an edge when it comes to imagery.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree with that.
But when it comes to rewatchability, I see what you're saying, and I tend to agree that I think with Tony Scott tends to make more of an actioneer type film with a killer cast.
Yeah,
where
no.
You might get Ridley Scott with a more of an interesting story, maybe? Would that be the kind of thing that maybe he might have the edge on?
I think it's more of this. I think Ridley Scott's film, yeah, there's a deeper story there. But for the most part, when you go down this list, except for maybe a couple of exceptions, most of these films have a little bit of an epicness feel to them.
Right.
I would say maybe when I look at the Ridley Scott, the ones that maybe don't have that kind of epic feel to them, maybe Black Rain, G.I. Jane, possibly Thelma and Louise. I think that's kind of an interesting thing, but Alien feels epic. Blade Runner feels epic. Legend has an epic feel to it.
Gladiator,
obviously. Black Hawk Down, Kingdom of Heaven, American Gangster, Prometheus, whether you, what you think about it or not, that had that epic feel to it. And The Martian, the same thing. That just the visuals of that felt epic.
Right, right. But to me, rewatchability is really, really important. And first of all, I will argue, I think Beverly Hills Cop 2, for me, is more rewatchable than the first film because of the way that's shot. And I also think Tony Scott has a way of shooting. He really likes to close in on people's faces. He likes the kind of up in your face, kind of close personal action as well, which really lends well to the certain style that he is shooting. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I agree. In fact, what Tony Scott is very good at is constant motion with his camera. There's not really a lot of set shots with his camera.
Agreed. Agreed. I mean, right out of the bat, Top Gun, dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Obviously. I'll tell you what. When I look at these Tony Scott films, I think one of the things I think of, too, is I think his films are what those type of films that they're good to see in the theater. But for the most part, if you don't see him in the theater, but you see him on home video or on cable or something like that, you're good. You maybe didn't get that. They're not necessarily in need of that theater experience for the most part. I think there's a couple of exceptions on here, but I think for the most part, Top Gun, I think, was a theater film. I think Crimson Tide is a theater film.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. Okay. Let me ask you real quick here. Starting with Tony Scott, what would you say are your top three Tony Scott films?
A Top Gun, Crimson Tide, and I'm a big fan of Man on Fire, and I will say this, Days of Thunder is one of my all-time favorite guilty pleasure films.
That's four you've put. You want to just give me five?
Yeah, I'll give you five. The Last Boy Scout.
Yeah. I got to put True Romance, Last Boy Scout, Enemy of the State, Top Gun and Beverly Hills Cop 2. Those are my top five. Okay, what about Ridley? Give me your top five.
Top five for me for Ridley: Gladiator, Kingdom of Heaven, Alien, The Martian, and Blade Runner.
No Gladiator?
Oh, I said Gladiator, didn't I?
Oh, you did. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
I would go with Blade Runner, Black Rain, Gladiator. That's tough. Alien and I'm going to go with American Gangster, Prometheus. It's kind of a tie for me right there, but yeah.
So again, I think what the biggest separator for me between these two, cause I think these are both some outstanding movies on here. Ridley's, and it comes back to me, Kevin, and we've talked about this. Ridley Scott's movies are a theatrical experience.
True.
They need to be seen on the big screen. Tony Scott's movies, I think, are more of the, I'm grabbing my popcorn, I'm sitting down on my couch, and I can sit down and watch this at any time.
Yeah. Would you say they have, on average, would Tony Scott films be more rewatchable than the Ridley Scott films?
I would think so, because, I mean, here's the thing with the Ridley Scott films. One, let's talk about the length of these films. Most of these Ridley Scott films are easily between 2.5 to 3 hours long.
I would say less than that. I would say between an hour and 45 and 2 hours, actually.
Well, Gladiator's
fairly long. I'm sorry. Back up. I'm thinking Tony Scott. You're talking about Ridley Scott.
Yeah, Ridley Scott.
Yeah. You're right. They are longer. They are on the long side. Yes.
But
whereas the Tony Scott films are around 2 hours, it seems.
Yeah, two hours seems to be about the mark there. I think Ridley Scott is, again, you revisit certain films of his. when you have to be in that certain mood. With Tony Scott, it's couch potato theater time. It's like, this is on TV. It's like, I mean, every single one of these of his movies are ones, if I catch it on TV, I'm probably stopping there and finishing it out.
Yeah, because I'm looking at Ridley Scott's films. Some of these are a tough watch, you know? And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does hinder the rewatchability to a certain degree. I have trouble getting through Legend. Thelma and Louise, I'll be honest with you, I have trouble getting through that. It's because I know what's going to happen, you know? Yeah. I was watching Black Hawk Down the other day. It was on HBO, and so I didn't catch all of it, but man, that's a tough watch, dude.
it's a tough watch because it's a very heavy movie. The other thing I don't like a lot about Black Hawk Down, and I love the intensity of it, but they all look the same. It's hard to differentiate the actors apart in Black Hawk Down because it's dark. There's so much action going on. The camera is so frenetic in there. Except for a couple of people, like Tom Sizemore really stands out. Eric Bana stands out. Obviously, Josh Hartnett stands out. But everybody else, like, oh, yeah, you forget that's Ewan McGregor, or you forget that's Orlando Bloom or such and such, because everybody's made it almost, like, look alike.
It's really amazing, though, the work that both these brothers have done. I didn't do any research to see if they've worked on stuff together. I feel like they have.
I think they probably produced each other or co-produced something.
I don't think they've ever
directed together.
Because I know with Tony Scott, you had the Bruckheimer and Simpson producing duo, and then of course you had Denzel Washington became a Tony Scott muse. You know, he was in several of his films. So it's interesting to see both of the different styles and the directions that they went.
Yeah, no, I agree. So Kevin, I'm gonna ask you: is there any we're getting to kind of the final rounds of this first versus segment? Is there any other things you'd like to throw in? You know, try to throw those last few haymakers here.
What, for Ridley Scott or
for either or? Do you have any like last tidbits you would like to throw in those haymakers before?
I would like to mention that that didn't make his list because a lot of people don't know about it. But one of Ridley Scott's earliest films called The Duelist, I did want to throw out there. It was one of his first major films, and it's based on a true story, if I remember correctly, was it 1700s, maybe early 1800s, if I remember correctly. It was about two guys that would duel each other every few years or so. And it starred Keith Carradine and Harvey Keitel and Albert Finney. France, 1801, that's what it is. It was this duel that spanned several years. And the fight scenes, the sword fight scenes in this are just brutal, and they're just great. And I highly, highly recommend that. I think that one of Tony Scott's underrated films, in my opinion, is The Last Boy Scout. That's one of Tarantino's favorite films, actually. I heard him speak on this personally. And I think that if you have not seen The Last Boy Scout, you really need to do so, because that movie is just so much fun. What about you?
For me, one you didn't mention with Tony Scott is, and there's two actually, The Fan with Wesley Snipes and Robert De Niro. You remember that film?
Yeah, it was a tough watch.
Yeah. And then The Taking of Pelham, 1, 2, 3.
Oh yeah. 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 He also did The Hunger too. Early on as well.
And a good Ridley Scott one that you left off of. One of my favorites, Tom Berenger, Mimi Rogers, Someone to Watch Over Me.
Oh yeah. 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 One of my favorite underrated, Tony Scott ones though is Revenge. Is a great film with Kevin Costner. I love that film. So good.
However, there's a couple of things with Ridley Scott I've got to give him a few points off for. He did direct Exodus, God and Kings.
God, I tried to watch that. It was so dumb.
And let's be honest, Ridley Scott is the reason we did not get a certain alien film that we were all very much hoping for.
Yeah, we were hoping to get a direct sequel to Aliens, if I remember correctly. The director of
District 9.
Yeah, District 9 was ready to roll with it, and
Sigourney was signed on for it.
Yeah, we even saw some pictures of props and
Neil Blomkamp is the director's name.
Yes, Neil Blomkamp. Yeah, but Ridley says nope. I got my stories to tell instead.
So I gotta give him.
Prometheus, which I liked, but then oh my gosh,
Alien Covenant.
Covenant was just horrible. Ugh.
So at the end of the day, Kevin, who do you have coming out in the throwdown, the versus throwdown between Tony Scott and Ridley Scott?
I'm going to give the edge to Tony Scott.
I think I am too. I think it's a split decision with the judges. I think Ridley Scott has just as much of a pedestal to stand on, and this could easily swing either way. But I think the funness, the rewatchability, and the more relatability to most of Tony Scott's films.
Enemy of the State is so good, man. Oh,
I love Jack Black and Seth Green in Enemy of the State.
Yes, yes. Great cast. But to me, I'm going to give it to, I mean, of course, and you got Top Gun. Top Gun's just a fan favorite, but my favorite is probably True Romance.
Yeah. Yeah,
it has one of my favorite movie scenes of all time in there.
Yeah. I mean, these are two outstanding directors, and you can't lose either way. I think it's what it boils down to. It's a matter of taste at this point.
Yeah. So next week, what we'll do is we'll give the results of the fan poll I did on social media, and then we're going to announce what the next throwdown will be.
Yep, I agree. So looking forward to that. Kevin, before we get out of here, any final words this week for everybody out there?
Just stay safe out there. You know, I know it's getting a little frustrating with stuff, you know, being in quarantine and being stuck at home, but just be safe. We got some wonderful Couch Potato Theaters coming out. If you haven't already, check out the one that our friend Lee Fillingsness, my co-host of Highlander Blood of Kings podcast, did with his mom, where they talked about her favorite film of all time, and that is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And I just want to mention his mom gave some great insight to what it was like going to the movies back in those days, because Kyle, when they went to the movies, there was no home video.
Yeah, oh, you know? I know.
And it was like, once it left the theater, it was gone.
Yeah.
And so talking to her and hearing her talk about going to the movies and paying her 35 cents, riding 4 miles on her bicycle to watch this movie, where if you got in, you got to stay in the theater all day and watch the movie over and over again. That's how they'd enjoyed their movies, because they thought they would never see them again.
Yeah, there's also some great stories about going to the drive-in theater.
Yes, Lee touches on that. But that was a great Couch Potato Theater. Make sure you check that out. We also got, what else we got coming out?
Well, first of all, I just want to say too, Kevin, if that Couch Potato Theater didn't inspire you to finally go watch Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
I will. I am going to watch that movie.
We also have another Couch Potato Theater that's going to be out by the time you listen to this, because it's time, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. The Dodgeball Couch Potato Theater will be out.
Looking forward to listening to that.
Of course, you know, we got our other great shows, including our newest show, Making Treks, which just had a new episode drop where they're talking about the Star Trek Enterprise show. Or kind of a lot of what the show that a lot of people might feel like is maybe the black sheep of the Star Trek universe.
But it's a great show. It really is. I just wish it would have gotten another season or two to tell its story. But it's highly underrated. It's a really good show.
And you've got some epic interviews coming up with Blood of Kings, Kevin.
I do. Next episode, Edwin Itzy Atkins, who is the New York set designer for the original Highlander, for when it was filming its scenes in New York. And then we've got some great interviews with Peter Wingfield, Mythos from the television series, Jim Burns, who played Joe Dawson, and Mr. David Abramowitz, one of the lead story writers and such. I'm really looking forward to sharing those.
Yeah, and of course, our buddy Dan Hadley's got some great stuff going on over at Type 40, the Doctor Who podcast, even though Doctor Who's on this forever break right now. He's got some great stuff with Classic Who and getting a lot of thoughts. He actually had me on recently, along with our good friend John Mosby, as we kind of gave our overview thoughts of the past season and some of the craziness that's going on with Doctor Who right now. It was a lot of fun, and it's always good to podcast with Dan and always good to get together with John Mosby as well. That's coming out soon, but we're trying to do, like I said, give you podcasts to feed your ears around here. So hopefully you're enjoying it. And as always, before we get out of here, stay safe, respect each other, and enjoy your fandom.